Welcome to Generations with Kevin Swanson. It's about the survival of faith, family, and freedom. It's about the future. He's a father of five, and he's committed to preserving a legacy for the next generation. Here's Kevin Swanson.
Welcome to Generations, my friends. This is Kevin Swanson, Executive Director of Christian Home Educators, also a pastor. It's good to have you tune in with us. I'm a father of five, and I'm raising my children out here on the eastern plains of Colorado. And we celebrated Martin Luther King Day in, I think, an unusual way. Every year, Dave, ever since, I think it was the Reagan administration, we've had the MLK Day. You don't get mail on that day. I think that's how everybody remembers that it is Martin Luther King's Day. And recently, what's interesting is we have seen a lot of critical writings about Martin Luther King. What's amazing about what we've seen is that most of these books are written by his friends or the liberal establishment. But what we're certainly seeing is that not everybody is seeing that Martin Luther King was the paradigm of virtue that many celebrate him to be with Martin Luther King Day every single year. Let me give you a couple examples of this. Investigative author David Garrow has described the findings compiled by FBI's investigation of the civil rights leader back in the 1960s. Evidently, the FBI investigation began with a request from the Attorney General Bobby Kennedy. Remember Bobby Kennedy, brother of the president? He ordered the investigation of MLK. Apparently, King was hanging out with a lot of communists. Now, okay, what's wrong with hanging out with communists? You been to Berkeley lately or CU Boulder for that matter? I'm not sure if that's a real problem in the minds of most people today. Communism, who cares? Hey, aren't we a mostly socialist anyway? So I'm not sure people really care about the fact that Martin Luther King hung out with a lot of communists. The problem is that the investigation did come up with King's embezzlement activities, employing prostitutes, alienating wives' affections from their husbands, and violation of the Mann Act. And evidently, the Mann Act was taking women across state lines for immoral purposes. So evidently, there was some of that going on as well. But now, that was the FBI investigation of the 1960s. Now, fast forward to 1989. In 1989, you've got this guy, Ralph Abernathy, who is King's successor, a good friend of Martin Luther King. He headed up the Southern Christian Leadership Conference after Martin Luther King was assassinated. He published his memoirs where he disclosed that King spent the night before he was killed in a sexual liaison with a female friend. Ralph also said in his book, And the Walls Came Tumbling Down, that's the name of the book, Ralph also says that he witnessed King engaging in sexual affairs with various women. The book was reviewed in the New York Times on October 20th, 1989, and allegations of the sexual conduct of King were discussed in that particular review. Also, more evidence indicating that King engaged in sexual affairs is detailed by history professor David Garrow, as I mentioned, in his book Bearing the Cross, Martin Luther King Jr. in the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. Again, these guys are not necessarily opposed to the King's agenda. They're supportive of what Martin Luther King did. They're just saying he had some problems. But again, okay, he's got a problem with womanizing. I wonder if this is really a problem, Dave. Maybe we ought to just build a monument to him, because that's what we built a library, didn't we, for Bill Clinton? So if he gets a library, why not a monument or even a library for Martin Luther King? I'm not sure that people are bothered by the communism, the womanizing, the plagiarism, and there are a lot of other things in the wake of Martin Luther King, but it just doesn't bother anybody anymore. Now, you probably don't get Playboy magazine, Dave, but one thing that did happen with Martin Luther King back in 1965 is he was interviewed by Playboy magazine, and he talked about his basic socialistic concept for America. Listen to this. Martin Luther King in Playboy magazine, quote, "All of America's wealth today could not adequately compensate its Negroes for his centuries of exploitation and humiliation." That's a quote. So, again, he insisted that black Americans be given preferential economic treatment. Of course, this would provoke similar demands from the disadvantaged of all races. He admitted that. But, again, quote, "I do not intend that this program of economic aid should apply only to the Negro. We must develop a federal program of public works, retraining and jobs for all." So his basic construct was a socialistic construct of redistributing the wealth. That's his worldview. Now, what's amazing about Martin Luther King, Dave, is how incredibly popular he is. Now, just the fact that I think it may be slipping out right now in the Generations program that we are not entirely excited about a womanizing communist, a man with socialistic tendencies, that may be perceived as negative.
We're not racist either. We're just talking about the man and his character.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And he did say that you ought to judge a man by the character of his heart, not by the color of his skin. So I think, you know, we're agreeing with him, and we're basically fitting into that particular part of that particular speech. But Martin Luther King is very popular. He was second most admired man of the 20th century. He beat out John F. Kennedy, but could not beat out Mother Teresa. He was elected the third greatest American of all time by the American public in a contest conducted by Discovery Channel and AOL. He is featured in the Gallery of 20th Century Martyrs in Westminster Abbey, next to Mother Elizabeth of Russia and Dietrich Bonhoeffer. So there he is, Martin Luther King in the Gallery of 20th Century Martyrs at Westminster Abbey. But now I think what we need to do is step back and say, what exactly did this man who allegedly was engaged in many sexual affairs, even a sexual affair on the eve of his own martyrdom. What exactly did this man do? Let's look at it. Let's look at what happened. Well, back in 1960, prior to Martin Luther King, there were 10-12% of black children born without fathers. Today, it is 70%. Before Martin Luther King started his work, there were 10 to 15% of black children born without fathers. Now, there are 70% of black children born without fathers. Did the government do anything to solve the problems for the blacks? Economically, they most certainly didn't. Listen to this, Dave. Back in 1960, only 0.8% of black men were in prison. As of 2000, 9.6% of black men were incarcerated. So was that an increase of 10 times number of black men incarcerated? The employment rate of black men in the United States fell precipitously from 89.6% in 1960 to 76.1% in 2000. Far less men employed. There are far more black men in prison today. What exactly did Martin Luther King do for the black race, for the African Americans right now in America? I tell you what, I don't think he did very much. Now, one point is, did he purge hatred from the hearts of men? I'm not sure that has necessarily happened. Is there less discrimination today than there was before? I'm not sure there is. Now, government transportation systems and government schools, forced integration, and laws against discrimination and hiring practices, etc. But I'm not sure there's less hatred today in the hearts of men for African Americans or for men for the color of their skin than there was back in 1960. Because, Dave, as far as I'm concerned, government policy cannot solve those problems, but the sanctifying spirit of God and the preaching of the Word of God can do that sort of thing. But, Dave, ignoble times like these call for ignoble heroes, people who live in times where there's a lot of people born without fathers, half of marriage is ending in divorce, a huge number of black men in prison. I think they're going to admire somebody like Martin Luther King, who was involved in all sorts of sexual liaisons outside of marriage with his own wife, you know, or even Bill Clinton. People love ignoble heroes in ignoble times like these. In a moment, my friends, what my family did for Martin Luther King Day this year, we celebrated the greatest Africans and blacks that ever lived, some great men who did some really great things, some honorable things. We're going to talk about that next. Great blacks, great African Americans, when we get back on Generations. Back on Generations, my friends. This is Kevin Swanson. And again, the lesson today is, let us celebrate true heroes, men of strong character in our families. And I question whether or not we should be celebrating Martin Luther King, a man who even his own friends admitted he carried on a string of sexual liaisons with women who were not his wife. That, to me, is a problem, and we ought not to be celebrating, and we should not celebrate Bill Clinton. Now, maybe he did some good things. Maybe you're a Democrat out there, and you think he did some good things. But his sexual liaisons, admitted by himself and by many others, were a serious mark upon his character. He ought not to be celebrated, my friends. I know ignoble times will raise up ignoble heroes, And people will admire people who were very flawed in character, but we ought not to do that sort of thing. Well, what we did for Martin Luther King Day this year is we looked at some of the greatest men that God has used, men of darker skin. Now, granted, folks, all of us came off the ark. We're all descendants of Noah, so come on. There's no effective difference between cultures in terms of the essence of human value, of who we are. And we ought to be very careful that we don't consider one race as better than another. That, my friends, is not a biblical way of looking at race, and it most certainly is drawing upon the hatred and anger that seems to reside in the hearts of men. And we ought not to do that. So what we want to do, what we like to do, is from time to time look at those who God has raised up from areas of the world that have darker skin and say, hey, God has used these men in a mighty way, and we need to celebrate them. Dave, one of the heroes in our home is Athanasius. We love Athanasius. We've been reading about him quite a bit lately as a family. A lot of people may not know who he is. He lived in the 300s, and he fought the case for, and around 300s and 400s, and he fought the case for the doctrine of the Trinity. The man lived in North Africa, in Alexandria. He fought the Arians, who were effectively Jehovah's Witnesses of the time, who denied that God was one in three persons. He fought for that very basic Christian doctrine, and Dave, for a large part of his life, about 20 years out of his life, he was in exile because it was unpopular. It was against the law to stand for the doctrine of the Trinity, despite the fact Nicaea had confirmed the Trinity. The Council of Nicaea had confirmed it, but Athanasius was persecuted because he stood for the doctrine of the Trinity. At one point, it was Athanasius contra mundum.
Don't you think it's a little bit delicious in its irony that a black man who's a hero of the faith was fighting a group of people called Arians? Don't you find that irony delicious?
Yeah, there is some irony there. I hadn't thought about that before. Good point. Good point. Athanasius, a black man fighting the Arians back in the 300s and 400s for the Church of Jesus Christ, and it was Athanasius contra mundum. That is one of the most famous statements in all of history, Dave. It was Athanasius against the world, almost a single man standing up against the world. This man was a hero. He is our hero. And he was even in caves at points where he just hung out in caves and hid out. And he wrote and wrote and wrote. He was an incredibly intelligent man. And he defended the God-centered doctrine of the Trinity. And I appreciate Athanasius for that reason. Athanasius, a black man, an African, who stood for a basic Christian doctrine. And Dave, let's face it, at that point in time, the strength of the Christian world was in North Africa. And if anybody ever wants to say, hey, Africa is behind the times, Africa doesn't have a Christian worldview and never has, well, at one point, it was the center of thinking. You think of Augustine up there in Hippo in North Africa. He served there for 20, 30 years and wrote some of the best stuff that influenced the Christian world for the next 1,000 years or 2,000 years. We're still influenced very much by that man. A lot of good stuff happening in Africa back in the first several centuries of the church. So let's honor the man Athanasius and the others that that wrote and stood for Christian thinking back in the early part of the church. Also, Dave, another hero that we talk about a lot in our family is George Washington Carver. We love George Washington Carver. This is a good man. He was a black man. He was a man that came out of slavery, but did a tremendous number of things. He was a man that was really, we ought to govern by the character of his heart, not by the color of his skin. And let me read some of the accomplishments. I just pulled this off the web yesterday. George Washington Carver discovered 300 uses for peanuts. That's incredible. Hundreds more uses for soybeans, pecans, and sweet potatoes. Among the listed items that he suggested to southern farmers to help them economically were his recipes, improvements for adhesives, axle grease, bleach, buttermilk, chili sauce, fuel briquettes, ink, instant coffee, linoleum. Linoleum, back in the 1890s, it's incredible. Mayonnaise, meat tenderizer, metal polish, paper, plastic, pavement, shaving cream, shoe polish, synthetic rubber, talcum powder, and wood stain. And Carver did a lot of things to rescue agriculture back in the 1890s. He had developed his crop rotation method, which revolutionized southern agriculture. He educated the farmers to alternate the soil-depleting cotton crops with soil-enriching crops such as peanuts, peas, soybeans, sweet potato, and pecans. He worked at developing industrial applications from agricultural crops during World War II. he found a way to replace the textile dyes formerly imported from Europe. He produced dyes of 500 different shades of dye. He was responsible for the invention in 1927 of a process for producing paints and stains from soybeans. You know, he only filed 3 patents. His point was, God gave them to me. How can I sell them to someone else? He gave all of his money away. I mean, he had about $1 million by the end of his life. He donated it all to the Carver Research Foundation, Tuskegee, and continued research in agriculture till the end of his life. George Washington Carver, my friends, an African-American who did a lot of things, accomplished a lot of things. We asked the question, did Martin Luther King actually do anything? Did he actually produce anything? Can you see things that contributed something to the culture around him? It's hard to identify anything, but you take somebody like George Washington Carver, right away you can find perhaps thousands of different things that he contributed, and he most certainly is a great man. The other thing, Dave, about George Washington Carver, a very humble man, extremely humble man, a man that always acknowledged that what he had, God gave to him. In fact, I have a story about George Washington Carver in my book, Upgrade the 10 Secrets to the Best Education for Your Children. And one of the things I like about Carver, he was a very hands-on learner. He knew that you got to bring life integration into education. If you don't have it there, you have a very impoverished form of education. And Dave, I think that's the reason why he had such an applied science that gave us so many different things. He took scientific knowledge and actually applied it to certain things, something that modern scientists have a hard time doing. I would suggest to you, my friends, that George Washington Carver will be a man who will be talked about for the next 1,000 years if the Lord tarries and the world continues. George Washington Carver, a truly great man. Also, let's throw out a few others here, Dave. Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington was an inspiration behind George Washington Carver as well, because George Washington Carver taught at his school at Tuskegee. Booker T. Washington was born into slavery on a Virginia plantation and became one of the nation's leading educators at the Tuskegee Institute in Alabama. His clear emphasis on the value of character and the training of head, heart, and hand seems incredibly current, because people still struggle with the issues he addressed with great insight at the turn of the century. This is a quote from Booker T. Washington. I've learned that success is to be measured not so much by the position that one has reached in life as by the obstacles which he has overcome while trying to succeed. Booker T. Washington, also a great man. By the way, these guys were godly men. Both Booker T. Washington and George Washington Carver acknowledged a true faith in God and spoke about that faith all the time. All right, let me give you a couple of other examples of what I perceive to be great men. Great men from Africa, great men with a darker skin. One great man is John Jerry. Now, there's a guy that isn't discussed very much, Dave, but this is a friend of this program. He's been on our program once or twice before. This is a man who lives in Zambia. He's an African pastor in Zambia, and he has an orphanage, Dave, where he brings little boys and girls whose parents have died of AIDS. He brings them to his orphanage, and he takes care of them. This is an indigenous work, which means this is not a bunch of white guys coming from America and telling all the Africans what to do and funding the whole thing. This is John Jerry, by faith, raising up an indigenous work, taking care of the orphan that has lost both parents. These orphans, Dave, would be dead on the streets if it was not for this great man, John Jerry, who has produced an orphanage like this. And I'm sure there are many others like John Jerry in Africa who are doing wonderful, wonderful works, not unlike what Mother Teresa did. All right, folks, we're celebrating those with darker skin who God has done some incredible things with in the history of, say, the last 2,000 years. Talked about Athanasius, talked about Booker T. Washington, George Washington Carver, John Jerry, and let's just throw out two more. Thomas Sowell and Walter Williams. These guys are economists, all right? They've been writing books since about 1965. I think Thomas Sowell's been writing. Walter Williams in the 1970s and 1980s published a number of books. These are both black economists, and they are saying what needs to be said. They're telling the blacks, you know what? You need to work for a living. You need to prove yourself by the character of your heart. I think they're really above anybody else who is doing things for the black folks. They are bringing that message. You need to be judged by the character of your heart, not by the color of your skin. They're bringing that message and really applying it in the modern day. It doesn't matter who you are. Maybe you're a Christian and you're in an environment where people persecute you. They don't like you. Maybe they only want to hire you, or they want to advance you in your position because you're a Christian. Or maybe you're a darker skin and they don't want to advance you because you're of darker skin. Well, do the best job you can. And I think what Walter Williams and Thomas Sowell would say was, eventually the people that won't hire a very competent African-American man, they're stupid and they'll go out of business because they're not hiring the very best. These guys are saying, be the very best, stop whining, be the very best, and eventually a free market economic system will reward you if it's free market. Now, of course, if it's not free market, then it won't reward you. But they're fighting for a free market economy where men really will be judged by the character of their heart because they will work hard and distinguish themselves. Well, Dave, as I wrap this thing up, let me give you a little sample of what Walter Williams does. I picked up this Amnesty and Pardon that he produced on his website. I think it's precious. I want to read it here as we end our celebration of Martin Luther King Day for 2007. This is the Proclamation of Amnesty and Pardon granted to all persons of European descent from Walter Williams, and may I say that he is a black African-American. Whereas Europeans kept my forebears in bondage some three centuries, toiling without pay. Whereas Europeans ignored the human rights pledges of the Declaration of Independence and the United States Constitution, and whereas the Emancipation Proclamation, 13th and 14th Amendments, meant little more than empty words, therefore, Americans of European ancestry are guilty of great crimes against my ancestors and their progeny. But in the recognition Europeans themselves have been victims of various and sundry human rights violations, to wit, the Norman Conquest, the Irish Potato Famine, decline of the Habsburg dynasty, Napoleonic and Tsarist adventurism, and gratuitous insults and speculations about the intelligence of Europeans of Polish descent. I think he's referring to pull-off jokes there, Dave. I, Walter E. Williams, do declare full and general amnesty and pardon to all persons of European ancestry for both their own grievances and those of their forebears against my people. Therefore, from this day forward, Americans of European ancestry can stand straight and proud, knowing they are without guilt and thus obliged not to act like fools in their relationships with Americans of African ancestry. Walter E. Williams, gracious and generous grantor. And Dave, you got to appreciate a guy like that. Ladies and gentlemen, you can interact with our program by emailing me at host@kevinswanson.com. And you can hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we lay down a vision for the next generation.